Unlike his old friend the Avatar, Corwin did not manage to begin his professional bending career by instantly committing a foul. Apart from that, though, his debut round was no more distinguished than Cora's had been. She, at least, had seen her teammates in action before joining them. Though neither of Corwin's was entirely a stranger to him personally, he didn't have even that tiny bit of preparation in hand. He'd seen the game played more than she had when she started, but he had no particular feel for the court or the players, no instincts for position or timing. Only a lot of not directly applicable combat experience, a measure of raw ability, and a talent for improvisation sufficient to avoid making a complete hash of everything, at least right away. Unfortunately, that was evident to the ice wraiths. Zanya, in particular, had a well-developed sensitivity to the weaknesses of other players, and she zeroed in right away on the ferret's replacement earthbender's hesitancy. He was a big, husky lad, and he had an interesting way of moving. She'd never seen a man of his size, particularly an earthbender, who was so light on his feet. But he was clearly too concerned about getting in his teammates' way to mount an effective offense. She glanced at Casa, her upper lip curling back from her teeth in a familiar sneer, and he nodded. He'd seen it too. While Dr. Rockalange kept the ferret's firebender busy, Casa and Zanya double-teamed Karana, forcing her to make a desperately acrobatic move to keep from being driven back into Zone 2 by their combined assault. Corwin moved to support her, pulling an earth disc up from the nearest dispenser in front of him. He had intended to use this to intercept the blast of water Casa was directing toward his teammate, but he misjudged both its weight and the amount of force necessary to pull it from the dispenser, and, like a man who didn't realize the cart of milk in the fridge was mostly empty, ended up flinging it clean off the side of the court. "Damn it," he blurted, turning to try again with the one to his right. "Never mind me, look out!" Karana shouted, pointing with one hand as she deflected Casa's blast with the other. Corwin got the disc out of its depression in the floor without hurling it into the moat this time, then turned in the direction Karana was warning him about, and straight into a bolt of flame that struck him full in the face. The crowd, which had been laughing at him a moment before, now gasped as one as he recoiled from the blast, falling to one knee and batting at the flames clinging around the edge of his face guard. "Ow! Ow! I'm on fire!" he declared, sounding more startled and dismayed than actually hurt. "Corwin!" Karana cried, springing to his side. "Are you okay?" Corwin finished pulling off his helmet. "I'm fine," he assured her, coughing and waving away smoke. She knelt beside him, moving his hands away so she could examine his face, as he assured her again, "I'm fine, I'm fine. Am I missing an eyebrow?" "Penalty!" the referee barked. Unfurling a yellow fan, he displayed its face to Zanya and declared, his voice amplified to reach the far corners of the arena, "Ice Wraiths, Red 32, flagrantly unsporting conduct. 32 warned. Blue side withdraws to Zone 2. Amid the storm of boos that followed, Zanya sauntered insolently to the center line as Karana helped Corwin up and said, "Worth it. I've told you before, Karana, if you simply must bring your boyfriends to the arena, at least make them sit in the stands with the rest of the rabble." Then, with a dismissive shrug, she went unhurriedly back to Zone 2 on the blue side, returning to formation with her teammates. Karana stared after her for a second, her fists slowly closing, then turned away with a growl and finished helping Corwin to his feet. Casa didn't seem to have an opinion one way or another about the penalty, but Azana, advancing into Blue Zone 1, noticed that Dr. Rockalange seemed annoyed. She wondered if he had been sufficiently briefed as to his new teammate's proclivities before he'd signed with the Ice Wraiths, decided she didn't care at the moment. Karana stepped up next to her, jaw set, eyes cold. "This is only an exhibition match," she observed matter-of-factly. "Not even the preseason yet." "No, Karana," said Azana. "I'd only be suspended for a week. Two at the most," Karana persisted. "No, Karana. No jury in Republic City would convict me. No, Karana." The firebender looked past her, not literally, smoldering teammate and said, "Okay, Corwin?" Corwin finished fastening his slightly scorched helmet and nodded. "The Earth disks are terracotta, not solid stone," Azana pointed out. "They're lighter than they look." "Yeah, thanks, noticed that," Corwin replied casually. "Fire Ferret's Green 99, can you continue?" the referee asked. Corwin gave him a thumbs up. "Very well." "Oh, come on! A lousy one-zone penalty for that?" Cora demanded, shaking a fist at the ref's box. "That was a flagrant round forfeiture at the very least." "Boo!" Maki agreed. "Team warning!" "The fix is in," Null jeered. The rest of the round went little better. Corwin contributed little of note, despite what was obviously a dogged effort to do so. He just never seemed to arrive in the right place at the right moment to accomplish anything useful. In the end, the Fire Ferrets were forced out of the territory they had gained, then driven back to Red Zone 2, and the Ice Wraiths took Round 1. During the short break between rounds, while the players regrouped and caught their breath, it occurred to Cora to use her Gearphone's radio function and pick up the Republic City radio broadcast of the game. "Earthbender is a strange one. I don't think I've ever seen that technique before," the play-by-play announcer. Cora could never remember their names anymore. All she really cared about was that they weren't Shiro Shinobi, was saying as she tuned in. "Makes you wonder where they got him." "At a guess," the color commentator quipped dryly, "under a bridge." "He's sure not making much of an impression so far, it's true," the play-by-play man agreed. "But let's not count the Fire Ferrets out just yet. They've pulled off some magical second rounds in the past. Time now to see if they can do it again." In round two, Corwin seemed comfortable with the playing field and the apparatus, and more in tune with his teammates in terms of positioning and timing, but he also appeared to be... His friends and family in that one section of the stands weren't sure what. Preoccupied? Almost distracted. It was like there was something going on out there that he hadn't quite put his finger on, and none of the people watching from the sidelines could figure out what it might be. Whatever it was, it seemed to be keeping him from giving the match his all. Unfortunately, the Ice Wraiths were giving him their all. Like sharks scenting blood, they were concentrating virtually all their fire on him, evading attempts by his teammates to intervene, and pummeling him mercilessly. Zanya kept her attacks legal this time around. She knew well that if she blatantly fouled him again, she'd be ejected from the game, but only barely, and Casa's whole thing seemed to be skirting the boundaries of the rules. Waterbending attacks were to be no more than a second long, and ice was not permitted, but the Ice Wraith's waterbender had clearly put in a lot of practice learning to channel water that was just barely not frozen. The only one of them not being particularly vicious about it was Dr. Rockalanch, but he hit hard anyway. "Well, Zheng, It looks like the Ice Wraiths don't like Watari Karasu any more than you do, said the play-by-play man's voice tinnily from Cora's phone speaker. You know Zanya and Casa have both been vocal proponents of eliminating Rule 74 in the past, Kenji, the color commentator remarked. Unless I'm very much mistaken, Karasu is being made an example of here. Mark my words, what we're watching right now is the case study that'll finally see that antiquated, dangerous rule struck from the books at this year's mid-season referees conference. There's no place for amateurs like Karasu in the modern game. I just hope the poor jerk survives. Utena and Anthy sat side by side in the stands, slowly eating their snack foods of choice, never taking their eyes off their lover as he was beset from all sides, driven inexorably back to Red Zone 3 despite his teammates' efforts to help him. He's not doing very well, Anthy observed matter-of-factly. No, he's not, Utena agreed. Anthy ate another couple of flaming fire flakes, her expression thoughtful, and then added mock-candidly, I'm starting to doubt his suitability as a mate. Bit late for that now, Utena pointed out. Anthy glanced down at her expanded middle and shrugged. True. Next to Utena, Cora had seized her sidelocks in dismay and was sinking lower in her seat, as if pulling herself slowly down by them, as Corwin was backed right to the edge of the court by the onslaught. And then, Cora couldn't have said how, exactly, or how she knew it had, but something changed. Cora and the others were too far away to see Corwin's facial expression, but if they could have seen it, they would have understood immediately what had changed. Azana saw it, but she didn't know him well enough to realize what it meant when his look of grim and vaguely preoccupied concentration suddenly cleared, replaced with a slightly cruel little smile. Eyes narrowed, teeth slightly bared. It was an expression many of his friends had seen before. It was the look he got when he was thinking, I have you now. He sidestepped, his hands raised in the curious way he'd learned from his very unusual teacher, palms up, fingers curled upward, and popped an earth disc from the nearest dispenser. Splaying his fingers stiffly, he turned the disc upright on its edge and used it like the flapper in a valve, blocking a stream of near-frozen water from Casa. A jet of water shot through the square hole in the middle of the disc, but he'd tilted it so that the jet missed him, spraying harmlessly off at an angle. That was a pretty nice move, and got an approving and slightly surprised, ooh, from the crowd. And another when, still in motion, he stepped away from the edge of the court, flipped the disc flat again with another stiff-fingered gesture, and launched it to intercept a second one sent speeding toward him by Dr. Rockalange. The two discs annihilated each other in a billowing cloud of dust that swept back and blotted Corwin momentarily from sight. He emerged from the far side, having advanced right to the line dividing Red Zones 2 and 3. Another bolt of Zanya's fire struck him high in the chest, no more than an inch lower than unmistakable foul territory, and blasted him clean off the platform. He fell like a meteor, trailing flame, and splashed down in the moat far below. No action was forthcoming from the referee, or either of his linesmen, apart from the routine logging of Fire Ferrets number 99, as eliminated from play for the remainder of the second round. Cora, her face suffused with wrath, reached up and took hold of the crown of the hat with one hand, intending to wrench it from her head and then unleash the full flower of her fury on the referee and damn the consequences to crowd control. Before she could do so, however, the figure to the avatar's left had shot to her feet, drawn breath, and roared in a voice that could clearly be heard as far away as Aang Memorial Island. Oh, come on, ref! People winced and dived for cover all around the arena as the shout resounded from the walls and ceiling. Up in the glass dome surmounting the playing surface, a few of the many intricately framed panes of glass cracked, though none broke outright. There was a second or so of utter silence. Then the five remaining players recovered their wits and resumed the action, while much of the crowd voiced similar sentiments at a somewhat lower volume. Still, there was no call. Red-faced, but not with embarrassment, Nima returned to her seat, her substantial jaw set angrily. Cora leaned over to her and murmured, "I said you should speak your mind more often, Neem, but spirits." "Sorry," Nima replied tersely, and then, in an even lower undertone, "I'm not sorry." Cora chuckled and patted her knee. "He's fine. Look, he's already on the elevator." Corwin had indeed reached the platform that would carry him back up to the court once round two was over. He stood on it now, dripping, his helmet in hand. Looking up, he scanned the crowd until he found the section where his friends and lovers were sitting, then grinned and gave them a thumbs up so they would know he wasn't seriously hurt. The round ended not long after. Neither of Corwin's teammates had joined him in the drink, but by round's end they were barely clinging to Red Zone 3. "I bet right around now, Azana's wishing she hadn't listened when Karana said she knew someone who could take over for Shang Wan." Color commentator Zhang remarked from Cora's phone radio. "I'm fairly sure Zanya didn't really know what she was talking about there," play-by-play man Kenji said dryly. "In fact, I'm looking at the Fire Ferret's Form 74D right now, and you'll never believe this, folks. It's countersigned by the team's not-so-silent partner herself. This Watari Karasu fella looks like Avatar Korra's own pick." "Well, I guess that proves she's not good at everything," Zhang replied, "because she's sure no talent scout. The ice wraiths are murdering that poor fool. If I was him, I'd stay in the water." "Yeah, we'll see about that, pal," Cora muttered, as if the radio link were two-way and Zhang could hear her. Out on the court, Corwin stepped off the elevator and joined his teammates, working a last bit of excess water out of one ear with a pinky finger. "Okay," he said. "I actually didn't mind going in the water. It put my hair out." "This is not good," Karana said. "They've taken two rounds. Only way we can beat them now is to knock them all out in round three." "Well," said Corwin calmly, "I've learned two interesting things that might help with that." "What are they?" Azana wondered. "One, Zanya isn't blind in her left eye." Both women blinked at him, giving him matching are-you-serious stares. "I've been watching the way she moves this whole time. That eye patch is fake. She can see through it. I don't know why she's shamming. I don't really care why. But she is. So that's interesting. And two," he added with a tiny smile, "Dr. Rockalanch doesn't know that. He keeps trying to cover her left flank, even though she doesn't really need it. That's more interesting." Azana glanced speculatively at him, then smiled slowly. "Yes, it is," she agreed. "Let's try not to hurt him," Corwin added, buckling his helmet back on. "He's the only son of a bitch on that team who's even trying to play fair." If the Ice Wraiths were expecting the third round to be a simple matter, they were disabused of that notion almost immediately when the bell rang. After one round to find his feet and one to get his eye in, it appeared Watari Karasu was finally on the beam. His confidence was visibly, markedly improved in round three, and with it, apparently, his competence. He and his teammates were still an unpolished trio, lacking the nearly telepathic connections of benders who have trained together for months or years. But now that Karasu had found his groove, they did seem to have an instinctive rapport with which they could do a decent job of faking it. Thus re-engaged, the fire ferrets came roaring back from the brink of humiliation at the sound of the opening bell, zeroing in on their opponents with relentless, laser-like focus. The first object of that focus was Genju Wan, who had spent most of the first two rounds forming the opinion that his opposite number was no particular threat. Tossing that first disc clean overboard was the most hilarious rookie mistake he'd ever even heard of an earthbender making, and since then he'd seen nothing to make him revise his conclusion that Karasu was a well-meaning but tragically outclassed amateur. Well, until those few seconds before Zanya had blasted him off the platform, anyway. That was pretty impressive, he had to admit. Still, even a loser gets lucky once in a while. At first he thought the earth disc Karasu sent arcing toward Zanya's left was a clumsy attempt at blindsiding the firebender. A cheap shot, but permissible under the rules, and Gen did have to admit the guy rather owed her one. It was too obviously telegraphed, though, swooping in too wide and obvious a curve, easy for the likes of Dr. Rockalanche to spot and counter. When he stepped out of position to counter it, protecting his teammate's flank, the good doctor discovered just slightly too late that his counterpart had known exactly what he was doing. That disc wasn't for Zanya. It was for him. With a stomping sidestep and one of those weird palm-upward snaps of his left wrist, the man the Ice Wraiths knew as Watari Karasu redirected his strike from a lazily curving, patently obvious attack on Zanya to a high-speed, machine-precise shot straight into Dr. Rockalanche's heavily padded chest. Early in his bending career, Genju Wan had once been hit by a motorcycle, driven by a drunken young man on the way home from an after-party, following the very earth rumble in which Gen had just competed. In a lifetime of being hit by heavy things, it was the hardest impact he'd ever experienced. It had knocked him headlong up the street and fractured three of his ribs, putting him out of commission for 6 weeks. The policewoman who investigated the accident had told him later that if he hadn't been in such superb physical condition from all his training, it likely would have killed him. Taking that earth disc from Karasu didn't compare to that, but it was a respectable second place. It staggered him, something no one had ever managed to do in the 6 months he'd been cross-training for his jump to MLB. He hadn't thought these wimpy little terracotta discs could hit him hard enough to stagger him. This one did, making him stumble and gasp for breath. A half second later, he was deluged in cold water, instantly converting part of the cloud of dust the disc had exploded into on impact into a coating of thick, gluey mud all down the front of his uniform. He heard the buzzer as this impact made him stumble over the line into Blue Zone 2. Struggling to regroup, he stomped down hard on the canvas-covered metal deck of the bending court, wishing it could be replaced with the combined reassuring solidity and useful malleability of the stone arena used in earth rumbles. He could sink his feet into that for the 1 second permitted and regain his balance, or pull part of it up and shield himself from the relentless onslaught of the suddenly energized fire ferrets. Here he had nothing. He wasn't a metal bender, and even if he was, bending the playing surface was against the rules. Bolts of fire laced the air around him, adding a tang of scorched air to the smell of sweat and incipient panic that was starting to permeate his face guard. A couple of them hit him, thumping his chest like blows from an angry fist, and he heard the mud on his jersey sizzle and crackle as the heat baked it back into clay, than the buzzer that told him he just staggered back into Zone 3. "They're all over me," he cried, hoping one or the other of his teammates could step in and take some of the pressure off him. For a second, he thought it had worked. The small storm of firebolts around him cleared, and as he shook his head and tried to refocus, reaching out with his bending for the nearest disc dispenser to get back into the fight, he saw Casa rapid-firing blobs of water from the supply gutter built into the Zone 2 line at the Ferret's firebender, forcing her to break off the attack. Dr. Rockalanch turned his head and saw that his opposite number was also occupied, holding an earth disc vertically in the air in front of him and shielding himself from Zanya's counterfire with it. But where was... Karasu smiled slightly behind his tinted visor and took one wide step to his left, then spun his shield and launched it so that it flew edge-on, vertically toward Zanya, forcing her to dance aside. She saved herself from stumbling back into Zone 2 only by seizing hold of the rope at the edge of the ring. Behind the Ferret Earthbender, revealed again by this maneuver, was their waterbender, who had used the time afforded her by her teammate's shielding move to create for herself four shimmering, illusorily solid tentacles of water. Two surrounded her own arms, the others arched out and around from behind her like the extra arms of that weird Avatar Yangchen statue he'd seen in the Ba Sing Se Botanical Gardens. He was reasonably sure Avatar Yangchen hadn't really had four arms, but then again, who knew with the ancient air nomads? He didn't have a lot of time to ponder that, though, because she proceeded to launch first one, then another at him, each one a spinning, drill-like torpedo of semi-coherent water. The first hit him in the shoulder, nearly turning him completely around. The second hit the other, knocking him back the other way. The third and fourth landed within inches of each other, high on his chest, and catapulted him over backward. For the half-second or so it took him to fall to the moat, Dr. Rockalanch reflected that what he'd just been eliminated with might well have been the most beautiful bending technique he'd ever seen. "I need to get to know a waterbender who isn't Casa," he thought, and then he was swimming. In the stands, Corwin's friends and family realized that the flavor of the match had changed at around the same time as Dr. Rockalanch. Amy and Rory cheered louder, finally on the same side. Maki felt a smile stealing onto her face as she saw Corwin's movements get quicker, surer, more decisive. The hesitancy was leaving him, and he looked much more like himself without it, less the man thrown unceremoniously into the deep end of the pool, and more the confident youth who jumped onto a moving train without a second thought, just to break her out of her shell. At that moment, she also noticed that all four of the women sitting in a row in front of her had started leaning slowly forward, as if they were all actuated by the same lever. Anthy, Utrina, Cora, and Nima were all gazing intently at the scene, their shoulders slightly hunched, and they weren't cheering. Instead, they were all, in unconscious unison, murmuring, "Yes." She giggled and nudged Rory next to her, indicating them with her eyes. He looked, then grinned and passed the nudge on to Amy, who sent it on down the line. In front of the four, Kate and Anne noticed the same phenomenon at about the same time. Between Utrina and Cora, Maki caught a glimpse of the elder samurai looking back over her shoulder with a merry smile. "Down goes Dr. Rockalanch," Kenji's voice announced from Cora's near-forgotten phone radio. "What in the world is going on out there?" Cheng demanded. "The Ice Wraith's offense has completely fallen apart," Kenji declared, sounding rather more pleased about it than his colleague. "This man Karasu is finally starting to play like an earthbender, and the fire ferrets are crystallizing around him. I guess the Avatar might know what she's doing after all, eh, Zhang? Frickin' right I do, bucko, Korra muttered, virtually all of her attention still riveted on the playing field. If this were any other team, I'd suspect them of having pulled a switch when Karasu went in the drink, Kenji went on. Instead, I can only assume that he wasn't fully awake until he took a swim. Kasa put up a good fight, but despite his cool, dismissive northern demeanor, he wasn't one of those people who handle sudden reversals by getting tougher and more focused. He tried to counterattack, launching a furious fusillade of fist-sized water globules at Hazana, but his fine control was fraying, and some of them began sporting obvious icy crusts. That would probably have gotten him yellow-fanned, or possibly even red, since his team had been warned about that sort of conduct once already, but the point was moot. Azana's fury was such by this point that her flames had changed from the usual red-orange to yellow, then white, so hot that they flashed the ice bolts to steam before they ever reached her. She had to dial back with a conscious effort to keep herself from charring his uniform as she overpowered his offense, then slammed straight on through his defense and drove him to the edge of the ring. Even so, Kasa began to understand why people trapped in high-rise fires would willingly jump from ridiculous, unsurvivable heights rather than stay and face the heat. He didn't quite bail out. He was a professional, after all. But he'd have been lying if he said it didn't come as something of a relief when he ran out of floor and found himself falling toward the water. That only left Zanya, still fairly secure in blue too, and pretty furious herself by that point. She knew she still had this one in the bag. All she had to do was hold out for, glance at the clock, 44 seconds. 44 seconds, and this match would be hers. All hers. Corwin had to hand it to her. She really was good at the game. She'd managed to stay half a step ahead of him and Karana, while Azana was busy eliminating Kasa. Even their combined firepower had only barely been able to force her back to Blue Zone 2. Now that she was up against all three of them, she still wasn't going down easily. He wondered why, with the kind of talent and ability she had, she felt the need to play so dirty. She was by far the most acrobatic of the three ice wraiths, avoiding Karana's water streams and Azana's firebolts with a series of twisting leaps and flips that covered a lot of distance laterally, but gave up little ground where it counted on the playing field. Occasionally, she'd launch a counterattack as a matter of form, but all she really needed to do was run out the clock, and everyone knew it. "What's Karasu waiting for?" Kenji wondered. "His teammates are giving it everything they have, but they can't quite pin down a customer as slippery as Zanya without his help." "It's as if he's completely lost the plot," Zheng put in. "If he just stands there much longer, they'll wear themselves out, or just run out of time." Utena, her attention fixed on the floor, had unconsciously taken Anthy's hand in her right and Korra's in her left some time before. Now, as she heard the color man's pronouncement of impending doom, the corner of her mouth Korra could see drew back in a nasty little half-smile. "Wait for it, pal," she muttered, her voice a sort of low, happy growl. Korra nodded, though Utena wasn't looking at her, because she'd just had exactly the same thought. Corwin wasn't just standing around sucking his thumb while his teammates did the work, trying to force Zanya back and failing without his help. They were driving her, steering her, positioning her exactly where he needed her to be. Bolin would go for the bank shot right now, thought Korra. And as she thought it, Corwin wrenched discs from the nearest dispensers to his left and right simultaneously, set himself, and hurled them, but not at Zanya. The one from his left he dispatched to the right. It passed narrowly behind Azana's back and seemed bound for oblivion, like the first one he'd ever pulled. The one from his right crossed underneath it as it hurtled to his left, flashing in front of Karana between two of her water bolts. Zanya grounded in the middle of Blue 2, confident that she was still miles from the 2-3 line, much less the edge. With one hand, she deflected a pair of shots from Azana, noting with satisfaction as she did that the enemy firebender's flames had cooled to a dull orange, running out of gas. With the other, she raised a flame shield, boiling away Karana's latest attempt before it could strike her. Within her, she was gathering her own energies for a last-second counterattack. This was not strictly necessary. All she had to do was survive another 11 seconds. But she had Watari Karasu dead in her sights, right in front of her, and she was constitutionally incapable of letting him go unpunished, particularly when he was making it so easy. That little flash of competence he'd had seemed to have run its course. He'd spent the last 20-odd seconds just standing there watching, as if he'd forgotten he was participating, and then dispatched not one but two Earth disks into Neverland. Even now they'd be flying off into the moat. Hell, he'd thrown them away so hard he'd be lucky not to hit someone in the stands and get a 10-game ban. Just as she thought it, Zanya realized she was wrong. About everything. He wasn't just standing there. He was still in that strange earthbending stance he had, hands upraised, fingers splayed in a way that looked a bit painful. He wasn't watching his teammates work. He was looking straight at her. And he hadn't thrown the discs away. They'd hit the ropes, rebounded. Time seemed to slow down as the depth of her miscalculation struck Zanya like a fist. "I'm an idiot," she thought. And then first one, then the other rock disc, clobbered her amidships. The first one nearly knocked her off her feet to the right, breaking her rooted stance and dispelling the energy she'd gathered for her final strike. The second belted her in the opposite direction, and would have knocked her clean over, except that in the instant of weightlessness before she began to fall, a sphere of water 3 times the size of her head smashed into the center of her chest and swatted her from the air like the fist of an irritated god. She came down hard near the edge of the arena, the buzzer of Zone 3 relegation ringing in her ears, and then scrambled upright, exultant that even now they hadn't quite managed. Fire, incandescent white. So hot she imagined the air around it warping like hot glass. Charring an arc in the canvas cover of the floor in front of her, she danced back, teetering on the edge. Water. A disk of baked clay, upright like a coin flicked from a bent thumb in a childhood game, its edge crumpling against her armor as it smashed into her from logo to belt. Free fall. The sharp shock of immersion, the arena lights wavy blobs of yellow beyond the silvery ripple of the surface. Even down here, the roar of the crowd was deafening, though warped by the water into something like whale song. "Woohoo!" Cora cried, jubilantly throwing the hat in the air. "Now that's what I'm talking about!" Like a flash, Makoto darted after it, intercepting and returning it so quickly that its absence was never even noticed by most of the wildly cheering arena crowd. Next to Cora, Utena and Anthy weren't cheering, but only because Utena was too busy being kissed by her wife. "And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how you come from behind fire ferret style," Kenji declared. "Zheng, would you like wasabi or mustard to go with your words?" Cora didn't hear Zheng's reply, which was probably something ungraceful anyway. She switched off the radio and pocketed the phone, then told Maki to get the gang to Entrance Woe as soon as traffic would allow. As the moving platform started bearing the victorious fire ferrets off to their dressing room, Cora collected Pabu from Anthy, picked up the empty box from under her seat, and made for one of the service doors. After trashing the box in an appropriate receptacle, she took her time navigating the hallways in order to give the ferrets a decent interval in which to, well, make themselves decent. The crush up above was going to be such that even Maki would need at least 20 minutes to get the crew out of the building through the right door anyway. When she knocked on the door jamb and put her head into the dressing room, she found them all wet-haired and at least halfway back into their street clothes. "Hey, you guys," Cora declared, entering. "You put on quite a show." Karana grinned. "Yeah, this Karasu kid's pretty good. It's just as well we can't keep him, though." She caught Corwin in a playful headlock and mussed his damp hair. "If we did, it'd get all comics for girls up in this place." Tilting her head toward Zana, who was in the process of fixing her hair, she went on, "Zana and me would have a huge falling out sometime around the All-Star break, and, well, you know." She released Corwin to make jazz hands and said in a sing-song voice, "Drama!" Corwin rubbed his neck and edged away from her, eyeing her mock warily. "Also, I'm married." "Like I said," Karana declared cheerfully, "drama!" The fire ferrets and their patron emerged from the rear exit of the arena, about as far from the public entrances as it was possible to be. This was no particular protection, though, as virtually everyone in town knew that it was the door the athletes tended to use. There was an absolute mob of people out there. Many of them were press reporters, pushing and shouting questions, flashbulbs popping. The rest were fans and spectators. Some clamoring for autographs, others just cheering or taking in the moment. A few were even other competitors. The Night Vale Spider Wolves were instantly recognizable in their matching jackets, politely applauding a thrilling performance. "Oh boy," said Karana. "Okay, that's more of a crowd than I was expecting for a pre-preseason match." Cora grinned. "I'll handle this," she said, then whipped off the hat, handed it to Karana, and strode forth. The clamor kicked up a few notches as the reporters recognized her. The ferrets couldn't hear what she said to them, but whatever it was, it caused first a still louder surge of question and comment, then a sort of collective groan of resignation, after which the mob of press people dispersed. The Fire Ferrets fans were less grudging about it. Something Cora said to them got a laugh, and they went on their way with another round of waves and cheers. Corwin noticed with smiling surprise that someone even had a hastily painted banner on a pole, samurai film style, that said, "Watari Karasu rules okay." Azana nudged him with an elbow and gave him a sly smile. Fan sites within the hour. "What did you say to them?" Karana asked as Cora rejoined them, still grinning. "Well," said Cora with an unconvincingly innocent air, "as you know, I don't generally like to throw my weight around." Here she magnificently ignored Azana's skeptical snort. "But I may have just threatened to Kyoshi Island, the part of the quay they were standing on, and park them just off the Cross Harbor ferry route. The next one will be along..." She glanced at Corwin's watch. "In about 12 hours. Karana laughed. "You're mean." "No, I'm not," Cora objected. "If I was mean, I'd have just done it." "She's got a point there, Rana," Azana pointed out. "Also, I wouldn't treat your fans that way," Cora went on. "But they took less persuading than the press, anyway." Corwin opened his mouth to remark, But before he could do so, the passive mode UI of his Quarian Omnitool sprang to orange glowing life around his right hand, playing the guitar solo from the end of We Will Rock You. "What is that?" Karana wanted to know. "I have a phone call," said Corwin, surprised. "Excuse me a second." "Dang," said Karana, as he took a couple of steps away and raised his free hand to the side of his head in the international "I'm on the comm" gesture. "Is that a new Gearphone prototype?" she asked Cora. "They're really getting fancy with those glow screens." "Hello?" Corwin asked. "You're too far up on the balls of your feet, you little puss," a girl's voice declared cheerfully. "Why don't you just put on a dress and swish around for us?" Corwin looked at his Omnitool, faintly incredulous, then said, "Toph, how are you even watching?" He considered what he'd just said for a second, then added, "That's a question on several levels, come to think of it." "Nall hooked me up," Toph replied casually. "I can't even process that right now," Corwin admitted. "I knew I shouldn't have gotten him the Asgard extended throughput plan." "Well, go and enjoy your adoring public. That's the whole point of kicking that much ass," Toph told him. "You did good, Sugar Lump, even if you are a hopeless ponce. Later." The Omnitool interface winked out as she disconnected the call. Corwin stood looking at his hand for a second, then shook his head and rejoined the others. "Sorry about that." Cora eyed him warily and mouthed, "Sugar Lump?" Corwin just shrugged in reply. "Did your earthbending Sifu just phone you up and abuse you about your technique?" Azana wondered. "Yes, yes she did," Corwin confirmed. Then he smiled wryly and added, "And that makes me feel all warm inside. Verbal abuse and violence are how she shows love." Karana snorted. "Sounds like she's taking a page from the Beifong playbook." "She certainly is," Corwin agreed gravely, causing Cora to fall into a fit of giggles. "What's wrong with Gran-Gran?" Karana stage whispered to Azana. Azana shrugged. "Search me, she's your Gran-Gran." Cora recovered in a few moments, waving away their snark, and looked around. "Now where'd everybody else get off to?" As if summoned, Maki and the crew came around the side of the arena, having left by one of the public exits. They crowded around the ferrets, cheering, congratulating, introducing. Except Anthy, who went straight to Corwin and, without hesitation or opening remarks, took him in her arms and laid the kind of kiss on him that even her closest friends weren't expecting her to uncork in a public place. Well, said Utnu with a slightly sheepish grin, hand behind head. "Line starts in Anthy, I guess." "Ooh, me next," Nall declared, making a great show of elbowing his way past Utnu. People were still laughing about that when Anthy finished with Corwin, letting him go with a quiet, "Well done, my pillar." Corwin eyed her for a second, partly in surprise at what she'd just done, and partly because that was an odd thing to be called as an endearment. But she just smiled cheerfully at him, and he unconsciously mirrored Utina's gesture and said, "Wow, I must remember to show off for you more often." Karana put up a hand like a schoolgirl with a question and said, "Okay, just so I'm clear on this, whose husband is he, actually?" "Hi," said Utina, waving. "That'd be me." Karana nodded and made no comment regarding the obvious discrepancy there. Instead, she just said decisively, "Okay, I owe you dinner then." Uchna cocked an eyebrow at her. "How do you figure?" Karana grinned, looking remarkably like Korra when she did so, and replied casually, "It's my standard apology when I use people's stuff without asking first." "Ha!" said Nall involuntarily. Then he composed himself and said with heavy mock gravity, scandalous, scandalous. He glared at Corwin. "Man whore." Corwin shrugged, unconcerned. "Failed my dodge roll," he replied. "Anyway, speaking of dinner, I've noticed on many a training day in Valhalla over the years, getting beaten up is hungry work." "I'm with you there," Azana said at once. "I burned so much chi this afternoon, I feel like I might start fading away," she added wryly. "Don't want to start a new career as the ghost of the Phoenix House lobby girl." "Let's go to that new place," said Karana. "Korra, have you been there yet? It's amazing. Just opened a few weeks ago, down where old man Craddock's crab shack used to be." "No, I didn't know something new had moved in there," said Korra, intrigued. "What kind of food is it?" It's weird," said Karana. "But good weird. Some kind of foreign thing that just came over from Zipang. I'd never seen anything like it before." "Huh. Well, okay. Who's up for strange and experimental?" Korra asked the group at large. Twenty minutes later, the ravening horde descended on the former site of Old Man Craddock's Crab Shack, literally, in the case of those who had arrived on the back of Mogi. Slightly to Karana's dismay, everyone who had come over from the big universe burst out laughing at the sight of it. "What?" Karana demanded, climbing down from the pillion of Neri's saddle. "What's the matter?" Rory slid down Mogi's side to the ground, looking deeply amused. "It's nothing bad," he assured her. "Honestly, it isn't. It would take too long to explain, but it's nothing bad." "Really and truly," Amy agreed, jumping down behind him. She put her hands on his shoulders and looked around him from the right. "This is great." The establishment they had arrived in front of was a low, flat-roofed building, like many of the restaurants in this part of Republic City, and it sported a large, illuminated sign made up of individually erected glow-tube characters above the parapet at the front. The first and last two were Tongyu ideograms, and so not intelligible to more than a couple of the visitors from outside. But in between the pairs were standard letters, the two languages flicking alternately back and forth between neon red-orange and green every few seconds. And what the standard letter said was, "Celestial Pizza." Those who knew the one in Port Gerardar on Gerardo assumed this was an amusing coincidence, nothing more, until they entered the establishment and found themselves confronted with a tall, thin young man with a thick sheaf of straw-blonde hair pulled back in a rock ponytail, little round, blue-tinted spectacles, and a day or two's growth of beard. He wore the typical costume of a Republic City restaurateur, plus an apron, and as they entered he grinned broadly and swept himself into a deep bow, one wide-sleeved arm extended to his side, the other folded across his midsection. "Ni hao, travelers," he declared. "Welcome to my humble establishment. Here you will find the finest pizza in all of Dicho." Then, with a furtive glance around, he added confidentially, "Also the only pizza in Dicho at the moment." Uchina stared at him. Hell, they all stared at him, all those who recognized him anyway. But it was Uchina who took the lead, and Uchina who spoke. "Zack, what are you doing here?" Zack Stevens shrugged, still grinning. "Workin'," he said, as if it were both obvious and expected. "How many you got here today, Captain?" 1, 2, 3. "Whoa, 14, okay. You're going to want the big corner table, then." Utina shook her head. "No, I mean, how can you be here, in Dicho?" Zack's grin became a more personal smile. "Utina," he said, in a friendly tone which suggested that he'd expected better from her, but forgave her. "I'm everywhere people need pizza." Then, while she was still digesting that, he turned and conducted them to the aforesaid big corner table with cheerful efficiency, past menus all around, and asked if he could get anyone started with a drink, then bustled off to the kitchen. "You know Zaku?" Karana asked Utina, surprised. "Not as well as I thought I did, apparently," Utina replied philosophically. Dinner was a noisy, happy affair, as befit the occasion. The day's action was rehashed and analyzed, compliments exchanged, friendships built or reinforced. An excellent evening, one of a string of excellent evenings for several of those at the table. As she ate and participated in the flow of chatter, Utina found herself considering the two official fire ferrets. Azana she had already known slightly, since she'd been the night clerk at the hotel where she and Corwin had spent their brief but wonderful honeymoon the previous weekend, and had somewhat appointed herself their personal concierge while they were there. She was a very pretty woman about Utina's own age, with contrasting pale skin and coal-black hair, her wide, clever eyes an arresting shade of amber. As neatly groomed and impeccably dressed off-duty as on, she was warm and personable, but not as, well, as fiery as Utina would have expected from someone whose job was throwing actual fire at people. Utina supposed that was an illogical stereotype anyway. That supposition was borne out by her partner, Karana, who lacked any semblance of the cool reserve her Antarctic origins and element of, well, Utina guessed choice wasn't really the word, might tend to imply. She was boisterous, blunt, and cheerful, a very upfront kind of girl, a lot like Cora, who, at this range, Utina could see she resembled closely. She had the same medium brown skin, dark brown hair, and bright blue eyes. Karana was a little bit taller, her build just a trifle lighter, and she wore her hair in a simple, slightly asymmetrical, center-parted pageboy cut, with a single narrow braid hanging down over one shoulder, similar to a style she'd seen on some Jedi Padawans, instead of Korra's medium-length ponytail and sidelocks. They might have been sisters, and paradoxically enough, Karana was very slightly the elder-looking of the two. Karana seemed to notice Utina thinking her over. She turned her head and caught the pink-haired duelist's eye, then grinned at her and raised her glass. Utina returned the smile and the salute, and as they drank together, she decided she couldn't hold it against the girl that she'd kissed Corwin without the express written consent of Major League Baseball. She'd decided that Karana was the kind of girl who wouldn't be able to stop herself from sampling the merchandise under the circumstances, but also the kind who wouldn't take the matter any further. Besides, she told herself wryly, if she held grudges against every woman who at least theoretically wanted a piece of that action, she wouldn't have many girl friends left. Certainly she'd lose a few at this table, with the exceptions of Caitlin, Anne, maybe Amy, and probably Lakpa. Midway through the main course, a short and stocky figure dressed mostly in green entered the restaurant, looked around, and easily spotted the group in the corner. He approached them with a tentative air, as if uncertain whether he should really be putting himself forward this way, but Cora spotted him and waved him over with a smile. "Dr. Rockalanch, I presume," she said. "Would you like to join us? We can make room. You like pine pear? You wouldn't think it would work in this application, but it's really good with pig chicken ham." Gen Xuan shook his head, looking a little nervous. No, thank you, Avatar. That is to say, I do, but I don't want to intrude on your gathering. I just wanted to apologize to the fire ferrets for my teammate's conduct today. It was shameful. Those two are a scandal. I knew they had a reputation for hard-nosed play, but I had no idea I was joining such a pair of ruffians. Karana and Izana looked at each other, and some silent flicker of non-verbal communication passed between them, the sort of thing that friends of very long standing can do without thinking about it. Then they smiled and moved their chairs apart, bumping their neighbors over a bit and so on down the line until there was space for another. "Please, Doctor," said Izana cordially. "We'd like you to join us, to show there's no bad blood." Gen blinked in surprise, then said, "Well, if you're sure I won't be intruding." "Not at all," Izana informed him. "Yeah, grab a seat, Doc," said Karana, reaching to snag an unused chair from the vacant table behind her and spin it into place. "Well, I... thank you," said Gen, taking the seat. "And please, we're not, at work at the moment, so you can call me Juan." He gave a self-deprecating smile and added, "I'm not a real doctor anyway." "Well, if we're not doing stage names, I guess you'd better call me Corwin," said the man Gen had known as Watari Karasu. Gen looked a few places up the table to him. "No hard feelings on your part either, I hope." "Nah, not for you," Corwin replied. "Kasa, maybe. Zanya, definitely. But not for you." He gave the man a friendly grin. "I hope we didn't hit you too hard." "You, sir, hit me harder than anyone else has ever hit me in the ring," said Gen didactically. Then he smiled and added, "But it was a fair hit, and a man in my position can't ask for more than that. You've got quite a technique. I've never seen anything like it. Where did you study, if you don't mind my asking?" "I don't mind, but you probably wouldn't believe me," Corwin replied. "It's a very old style." "Oh, spirits, here we go," said Karana, rolling her eyes. "No shop talk at the table." "Rana, we've been talking about the matches all night," Izana pointed out. "That's not shop, that's war stories. It's when you get into training tips that I draw the line."